Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 221, recorded August 11th, 2011. Take me to Grumpy Street. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. GoToAssist Express by Citrix puts IT professionals in a position to do what they do best: access, diagnose, and resolve. Try it free for 30 days by visiting GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Carbonite. Backing up files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, visit Carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used gadgets. And Newegg.com, the place on the internet to shop for tech. Gazelle it today and receive a gift card from Newegg at Newegg.com/trade.
It's time for Windows Weekly, my friends, and joining us right now for episode 221 from Balmer, Maryland, or somewhere down that way, Virginia, I think.
Annandale,
Virginia. Mary Jo Foley, she's at SharePint.
No.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, I'm with the SharePinters, but this is the SharePoint Saturday Conference.
But it's on Thursday.
Thursday.
Yes. It's a 3-day conference. Today's day one.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Saturday.
Very nice to see you once again, Mary Jo. We look forward to lots of great information about Microsoft SharePoint on today's show. And also to my right, your left, as the crow flies, Mr. Paul Thurrott from Denham, Massachusetts. Hello, Paul. Good to see you again.
Thank you. You too.
Paul is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and news editor for Windows IT Pro, the author of many fine books, including Windows Phone Secrets. And Mary Jo, of course, at allthingsmicrosoft.com, the great ZDNet blog. So is the conference already underway, or this is before the conference begins? Or
nope, today was day one, and it's already underway.
Fantastic. And the SharePinters are just a smaller group who
I see. Yes.
I see.
Yes.
So they're not throwing the show.
No. Last night we had SharePints before the show. We SharePinted.
And today she's apparently in the public lockup.
Today I'm in the lockup. Very.
So the luxurious appointments.
I just gave my talk. I just did 10 things to know about Office 365 today.
Excellent.
And so now I'm in a padded cell to recover.
No. Somebody has very kindly given you their office, I'm sure, to let us do the show. Well, thank you, Mary Jo, for being here. How'd the speech go? How'd the talk go?
It went well.
Great.
Yep.
Good. Maybe you'll share some of those things. Those 10 things we should know with us, your people. the little people. The pints in SharePint, I would take it, are pints of beer?
Yes.
Cool.
It's like, you know, a tweet up. They had a tweet up the night before, so people came who are attending the conference. This is like an all-volunteer run conference. It's pretty cool, actually. They've got 1,800 people coming to talk about SharePoint.
So is it an unconference or is it a pretty traditional conference?
It's a traditional conference, but put on by people's peers, which is kind of interesting. So lots of tips and tricks, lots of things to help people use Office 365 and SharePoint, developers, customers. It's very well run, I have to say.
Well, great. I'm so glad you're there, and I'm glad you could join us from there.
Me too.
First story today, Mango Tango. There's a Windows Phone OS coming before Windows Phone 8, which is called Apollo. It's Tango. From Mango to Tango.
Why are you looking at me?
Because you're the Windows Phone wizard.
You don't know, but I've only heard about this through people like Mary Jo Foley. I don't know anything about Tango.
Well, Mango is the successor to Tango, is that right?
No. So here's the
You understand my confusion.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it goes like this: Nodo, Mango, Tango, Apollo.
Oh.
What about the first one, though? Did the first one, was that just Metro, or?
I don't know what the first one was. Huh. Good question.
So Tango is the successor to Mango?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But you notice they all end in O.
Oh.
Like Mary Jo.
Oh. Well, this is a new feature on the show, is that Mary Jo will talk about codename Bingo.
I think they all end in O because of Joe Belfiorio.
No.
Is actually a non-Americanized last name.
Oh.
Yes. No, I'm just guessing. I don't know why. I don't know why they all end in O. But Tango. So Tango's real. There were a couple leaks about it before I could get anybody to talk about it. But I've started poking around and people are confirming that Tango's real, that it may be two releases, not just one. There may be a Tango 1, Tango 2. And Tango 2 supposedly is going to target low-cost phones, so lower-cost phones than what we have running Microsoft's Windows Phone operating system now.
Oh. So, and maybe this would be the Nokia... I mean, we know that the Nokia, what is it, the N9, N10, whatever that beautiful Nokia they showed, that you know, with the big glass face, is one version of Windows Phone. But it does make sense because Nokia does most of its business, I think, in lower-end handsets, those candy bar phones, that there would be a version of Windows Phone for that. Do you think that's what this is all about?
I don't know. One of my sources said this is very Nokia connected and Asia focused, but I don't know. Paul, what do you think?
I can't believe that they would, you know, divide the software in two, that there would be two versions of this thing. It just does, it not only goes against the whole grain of Windows Phone, but it sort of ruins the point, right? I can believe that there would be lower end hardware that could run Windows Phone, maybe on with smaller screens and so forth, but that it would be the same experience. I mean, how lousy would it be if certain people with certain device types couldn't access certain apps or certain capabilities? I
be like Android.
It would be, yes. Yeah.
I think it's going to be one core thing that probably gets put, like you're saying, on different kinds of handsets. But I don't think it's going to be a split experience either.
Even within the context of Mango, one of the things that changed was, you know, in the beginning they had this notion that all of the processors had to be a gigahertz or higher. But now it's gone down to 800 megahertz or higher because there have been some, you know, efficiencies built into these mobile processors, you know, the Snapdragon-style processors that they use in the phone. So, you know, using that part instead of a full gigahertz or higher processor probably saves some amount of money, and maybe that's part of the rationale behind that.
It does. I mean, there's a market for, you know, lower-cost smartphones, I'm sure, especially outside the U.S.
Yeah. Windows Phone's tough because it's so connected and so relies on online services to do its thing that... You know, you could kind of imagine in an emerging market of some kind that you would be able to buy a phone and not have that contract, and it would not be connected a lot. But, you know, they would have to change the software in some ways to work efficiently like that. It's, you know, obviously Windows Phone is not as attractive when it's just offline.
Right. ComScore says Windows Phone is in use by roughly... And this is, by the way, this is a drop, a significant drop. 6% of smartphone users in the U.S. Wasn't it more like 13% a year ago?
I think it was a year ago, maybe, yeah. Although it should be noted that that's Windows Mobile plus Windows Phone. You know, I'm not sure.
I mean, 13% a year ago was all Windows Mobile.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is usage, not market share, right? So
they measure,
I think, people,
like, online.
People are walking. Yeah, people are hitting websites. Right. They get a rough measure of usage share.
Right.
I think it makes sense that people would be abandoning Windows Mobile, and that it probably, like the rest of the market, well, those people go to where the rest of the market goes.
Right.
Android, iPhone, you know, some go to Windows Phone.
You convert some of them, but it's hard to convert all of them.
It's hard to convert any of them when you think about it. You know, you've just had this piece of crap phone for 2 years. You know, how would you like another Microsoft phone? Yeah, I think I'm going to look around this time, but thanks. You know, without really understanding... You know how good it's going.
That's Microsoft's fault, that if they haven't got the message out that Windows Phone 7 is so different and so much better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's their fault, but it's also the wireless carriers who aren't doing a great job of promoting it, too.
Yeah, we already know that. You go in Verizon and say, I'd like a Windows phone, and they go, no, you don't. No.
No, you don't. Although you really kind of do. I mean, there's a, you know, I can't remember who I just discussed this with, but I had a conversation recently around Android, and I said, you know, it sounds crazy because they're so dominant, but I really feel like Android is kind of on some weird precipice right now where it's sort of a shaky kind of a thing. I'm not a big fan of the phone itself and the UI, and I sort of appreciate the position of iPhone people in particular who look at their, you know, their really elegant device, and they think that, you know, Android is like this rabble outside of the gates, you know, that breaking in, kind of like the PC industry did to the Mac, you know, years and years ago. And, you know, I sort of appreciate why people go to Android. But on the other hand, there's always, increasingly, with all of the news around, with all the stuff that's going on in Android, not just the patent stuff, but all of the stuff around Android, I just feel like it's, yes, it's dominant, but it just seems kind of iffy to me, the whole thing.
What,
you know?
What do you mean iffy?
I mean, I don't, even though they...
this Android thing is so iffy.
I know. Right, well, so...
Right, iffy.
So what do I mean by that? They've sold really well, but I don't feel like they have this... I don't feel like it has a permanence to it. That there is an opportunity now for Android not to be the next PC, where this is really just part of the revolutions that are going on right now in the mobile industry. And that, you know, the mobile industry might look very different in 5 or 6 years or whatever. That it won't just be Android on top with 50% and then everyone else eats up the rest. You know, I wonder if things aren't going to happen that will topple Android, and that it won't necessarily have to be iOS is just technically better, or Windows Phone comes along, that it might be a combination of other things that ends up taking down Android, that the benefits that it has now won't always be there, and that it just doesn't feel like a permanent thing to me, I guess is what I'm saying. I recognize that they're, you know, kicking ass and taking names right now, but yeah.
I mean, I guess when you have 6% market share, that's all you can hope for, right? Like,
well, no. I don't mean
I
it
hope
like
those other guys aren't going to continue to do so well.
I don't mean it like Windows Phone is poised for success. That's not what I mean. I just that Android,
it's ready to leap into the double digits, folks, any day now.
No, I that has nothing to do with what
okay.
I just said. But
okay, no, you're saying that nobody owns this market, and I think that that's actually true.
Right. Yeah. Plus, you could potentially see what happened in gaming consoles happen in phones, right? I mean, part of why Xbox became the number one gaming console was because of the things Microsoft did right. Part of the reason they did was because of what Sony did wrong.
Right.
Actually, that's an excellent point, because if we had had this conversation about the Xbox a year ago, they were starting to make this turnaround. But the 12 months previous, Xbox has done fantastically well and has won each month. I think every single one of those months. The 12 months prior to that, the PS3 was selling as well or better than the Xbox 360 most of the time. And there was and one of the things I kept pointing out was, what if you looked at the sales trends for those two consoles, it seemed like by the end of this console life cycle that the PS3 would have exceeded or at least tied the Xbox 360. And thus, how much of a success could the 360 really be in retrospect if all it achieved at the end of the day was a tie for last place, and it didn't beat the Wii. Of course, things have completely turned around then. And I guess, you know, when thinking about what I just said about Android, you know, looked at in a slice of time, things look a certain way. Right. But I think there are things going on that have nothing to do necessarily with Google strategy or the, you know, whatever. It's just all this other stuff, you know, that may change. It may not, but, you know, there's so much stuff going on around Android now. It just doesn't seem like this can last.
Well, that's good. I mean, and I think that this is kind of the way of the world now. You know, MySpace made way for Facebook.
Yeah.
And it's very similarly, because of things MySpace didn't do well, not necessarily because Facebook did so much better, but I think that's good. And I think these cycles go faster. Of course, they're faster on the web and in software than they are in hardware. But I
MySpace
think
is a great example, actually. So if you had written a story for a cover of a magazine 3 years ago about social networking, what you would have written about MySpace. Yeah. MySpace is, you know, I don't know what they are. They're in the trash now. It's gone. I mean, there's a famous story when Steve Jobs and John Sculley were on the cover, I think, of Business Week magazine, if I'm not mistaken, the dynamic duo. And they were already ready to kill each other. And in fact, Steve Jobs got kicked out of the company just a few weeks after that magazine cover appeared. You know, things may look a certain way.
It's like being on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Exactly. And then you get the career-ending injury, and that's the end of that. You know? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So you're saying that Android is, in effect, on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
I'm saying they may be.
Actually,
it's the guys who get on the video game box too, right?
No, it's on the cover of Patents Today or something.
Well, that may be the case. That may be
Android and why they're making patents, you know, irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. I mean, that actually. So there's different ways to fail. I mean, one, it could be the market. You could make, but it could also really be a litigation at this point. I mean, Microsoft's really going hard after Android, as is Apple.
One possible outcome is that those companies and the many other companies that own these mobile patents actually finally go after Google. Google loses in court, has to pay licensing fees on a per copy basis for Android. Android suddenly can't be free,
right,
or they just take a massive loss on it on every copy sold. And then suddenly it isn't that incredible business model that it appears to be right now.
Right.
I'm not actually saying that's going to happen. I don't
mean
it
even
like
wishing for it.
No, I don't really have an opinion on that. I don't care either way. I just look at this sort of logically, and I think there's stuff going on. You know, people are not happy with the way this has turned out, and
you mean with Android or
I mean in the mobile market, people who actually own intellectual property and can go after Google aren't necessarily happy because, you know, they've had these conversations with Google where they say, hey, look, your devices or the software that you give away for free uses technology that we've patented and that we own.
Right.
And Google does not license any of that. And they have shown no interest in doing that at all. And eventually, I think this is going to come to a head.
You know, I never asked you, and I'd love to ask you both, and this isn't on your list, but I'm going to throw it in, about Nathan Myhrvold. Because, you know, they did This American Life did a great thing on software patents. And and Nathan Myhrvold, who is a former, what was his title at Microsoft? Was he CTO?
Chief software. He was a chief software
chief
architect.
Software architect.
For Jobs. I mean, for Bill Gates.
Before Bill, yeah. And he left Microsoft. CTO. And a brilliant guy. I mean, there's no question this guy's a super genius.
Yep.
In many, many ways. I mean, just amazing. But he also founded what some are saying is a patent troll company. And he certainly took a lot of heat from This American Life show as a patent troll.
By the way, Paul Allen has also come under fire for the same reason. Yeah. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. I think Nathan Myhrvold might have been CTO. I don't think the chief software architect.
CTO sounds right, actually. Yeah.
I don't think that title existed before. It might have been Nathan Myhrvold leaving. I don't remember that. We'd have to look it up. But I believe he was CTO. Anyway, like you said, genius.
Yeah, I mean, certifiable genius.
It may be certifiable that being the key phrase here. Well, you're that smart. You're involved in technology. How can I make money being smart in technology? Well, one of the ways would be, oh, and by the way, you're rich too, right? Because as an early Microsoft executive, this guy, of course.
He was CTO, yeah.
Yeah.
And his company's Intellectual Ventures.
Sure.
Yeah. 500 patents. He has he has 17 patents himself. Which he got at Microsoft. So he has legitimate patents, but he's apparently started collecting them as well.
He probably collects lots of things, you know, expensive sport cars.
Yes, exactly.
The heads of his vanquished enemies.
He's quite a good photographer. He does amazing wildlife photography.
And, of course, he's recently written an incredible multi-volume set on cooking and food.
Yeah, he's a French chef.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah. And widely considered, you know, one of the smartest men out there. And yet, you know, he's in this kind of sleazy, potentially sleazy field. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's a justification. You know what, Nathan? I would love to get you on one of our shows. Can we? Eileen, let's go after
luck.
Nathan.
I think that the justification is that his lifestyle doesn't pay for itself.
all these Ferraris are starting to add up. It's starting to cost me something. I need some money here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's Paul Allen's rationale as well.
Right.
Hey, you know, you build a couple of submarines, pretty soon you start to need some cash.
Right, exactly. You know, being the next James Bond villain is not an easy task.
Now, it's not
if
just...
If it was, anyone would do it.
That's right. I've got the chair, but, you know... I have to get the hairless
you're
cat.
You're a monocle and a Cheshire cat away from what you need.
What does he say?
It's no, time Mr. Bond, to die, I expect Bond. You to die.
Yes, that's it. All right. So it's not just lawsuits. FTC is now investigating Google because of the bundled-in search service in Android.
That's this is bizarre. That Microsoft thing that we were talking about earlier, and I find it interesting that part of the FTC's investigation into Google involves Android, not for the thing I was saying, which was essentially that Google's dumping Android, but rather that by bundling this search service and other products into Android and not allowing their partners, meaning the people who make the phones,
you can't put Bing. You can't put Bing search on an Android phone.
I don't know.
You have a Bing app, but you can't change the browser. I think. I don't know. I should try it.
I don't know. It may vary from device to device, but when you think about Microsoft pre-Windows 95, actually right through Windows 95, because if I remember correctly, IBM, which at the time made the ThinkPads and so forth, didn't get a Windows 95 license until late because they were bundling Lotus, Lotus Symphony, their Office suite. Microsoft didn't like that, so they withheld Windows from them and gave them unfavorable terms for Windows. And so forth. So, you know, Microsoft has had a long history there of kind of forcing side technologies down companies' throats because they wanted Windows. And now this is a related charge around Android, where Google is requiring their search services and other products to be part of that.
But what's curious to me about this is, so why isn't Microsoft equally susceptible to this problem with Windows Phone?
Right.
They actually are building Bing in where it's like a hardware button, right?
Yeah, so for the same reason that Apple wasn't when Microsoft got sued, because Apple was dominant in that particular market.
Okay.
This is that whole, you know, your behavior is one thing when you have a monopoly, another thing when you don't.
That's right.
Yeah. Certainly, because Android's open source, the vendor of a phone, a manufacturer, could change that. It's not necessarily Google requiring it.
So this is just Google or FTC is investigating them.
Right.
They have not charged them with this, but this is one of the things that came out. It was a Wall Street Journal report. There were three areas that they were investigating or are investigating Google for. One is the search stuff, and they're using what is essentially a monopoly search service to push Google services over things that would naturally occur in search results. So. Again, very similar to what we just talked about, where they're de-emphasizing competing services for their own stuff. And I guess the other thing is, and this is kind of a Microsoftian thing too, although I would imagine Microsoft does this in partnership with other companies, but basically these guys spider and troll the web. They seize content that's on other sites, like TripAdvisor is a typical example. So you're looking for a hotel or information about a city, and then they propagate that information on their own site. So there's no reason to keep going to TripAdvisor because everything that's on TripAdvisor is already available in Google Search. So they're looking into that kind of stuff.
That's the ITA deal that Google made.
Is Google I'm not sure if that is ITA, but the notion that it, within search results, and Microsoft does this with Bing, you know, that people are searching for information. You know, one of the most basic thing you can do is throw up a list of sites where they're listed in order of some precedence or preference where you click on the link and it goes to that site. Well, wouldn't it be more convenient if the information that was on that next site was just there in the search results and you never had to go to that site? In some ways it would be, but it also, you know, kind of contorts things a little bit, and especially if you're the dominant player in that industry. So in Microsoft's case, you know, there's some nice little things built into Bing around music and celebrity photos and travel stuff like that. And obviously Google, to compete with Bing, is adding some of the same stuff in there. But then we get into that weird gray area where it's like, well, you're kind of a monopoly, so this may not be okay. But they're just investigating, so we can't really...
Yeah, that means they investigate everything.
Yeah.
They're investigating.
Yeah, it may come to nothing. There may, you know, it may lead to other things. Who knows?
Right.
They're investigating you.
Well, because I keep wearing the same shirt color as you, and apparently there's some sort of...
Your podcast monopoly.
Cool. Yeah. Watch out.
He's on 25 hours a day. I don't know how he does it.
How does he do that? there is a class action lawsuit going on against Apple and the publishers saying there's price fixing in ebooks. How does that relate?
It doesn't.
Okay. It says it's related, semi-related.
It says semi-related.
Semi-related.
It's a legal type thing, but...
It's just a tough thing.
I remember railing against this when it happened. You know, when Amazon was basically the only major player in the ebook market, new books were basically $9.99, and it was such a great price. And they should be cheaper than hardcovers.
They should.
Because it's so much less expensive to distribute them. So that was nice. And then, but Apple got into the market, and there was that big thing where the publishers were tired of Amazon underselling, you know, undercutting the pricing they wanted to have and everything. And Apple agreed to work with them, and together they raised, this is the charge from a class action lawsuit, that these guys basically colluded, Apple and the top six publishing companies, to raise the average price of ebooks. And sure enough, as soon as iBooks entered the market, the average price of these new ebooks went from $9.99 up to $12.99 to $13.99, $14.99, depending on the book. Kind of in the same way that the music prices are now tiered on iTunes, right? That, you know, older books are under a buck. Music is under a buck. Some music is 99 cents like it used to be. But then the brand new stuff is $1.29 often, you know. So this is something that occurred, according to this lawsuit, this class action lawsuit, through the collusion of Apple and these publishing companies. So we'll see what comes of that. I buy a lot of ebooks, so I've actually, this is something I see all the time. I mean, this is something that bothered me when it happened. It bothers me every time you go to buy an ebook, and it's, you know, it's $12.99 or $13.99, and you're like, you know, this would have been a lot cheaper if it was just Amazon.
Do you think they're colluding with Amazon as well? I mean, Amazon's the driver in that market.
No, the publishing companies always hated Amazon's lower pricing. Amazon was forced to raise. Amazon, in some cases,
is attempting to set up a competitor.
Yeah. You know, I think you could make a nice charge that Amazon was in many ways acting, if not illegally, then in a dubious fashion by, in some cases, selling books for less than it was costing them to buy because they were trying to establish the Kindle as a market. Although, I don't have the figure in front of me, but even today with the explosion in ebook sales, like overall ebook sales as opposed to paper-based book sales, I believe it's still only like 6 or 7% of the market overall. So it's not like half of all books sold are ebooks. I suppose, and of course, Amazon no longer has a monopoly in the ebook market at all. We've got Nook now, and we have iBooks, both of which are probably doing pretty well.
Well, and Apple has this whole, Apple does all sorts of predatory things like the in-app pricing. Amazon doesn't like that at all. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
Yep.
On that. Hey, we're going to take a break. Mary Jo Foley is here. She's from the SharePoint Saturday show, Saturday convention, Saturday
conference.
Conference. I knew there was a word there somewhere. And joining us from a conference room, oddly enough.
Yes.
Yes. Also, Paul Theroux. And we're going to talk more about the latest from Redmond. Those of you watching live, yeah, we're at a different time right now. It's because we flip-flopped with iPad today so Mary Jo could give her talk, which I hear went very well. You know, the only thing I feel a little bad about, there's about 30 people who came to see iPad today who are now watching Windows Weekly. But there's good news. There are two priests in the front row who are here just for Windows Weekly.
Maybe they could give last rites.
I think it's an old priest and a young priest. I'm thinking exorcist, but I don't know. Anyway. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We're going to take a break. Come back with more Windows Weekly. Before I go any further, though, I want to tell you about GoToAssist Express from Citrix. What a great product. It's actually the successor to something we used for a long time on the screensavers. I think it was called, I can't remember the name. It was Expert City. That was it. Citrix, which has a great, you know, remote access platform, acquired Expert City. And it's evolved over the years, and it is now GoToAssist Express, and it is incredible. If you are in the IT or support business, this is what you want. You know, you need remote support software. I mean, that's kind of part of your toolkit. And you got to use the right tool. This is it. It's easy to use for you and your client. And by the way, that's really important. If you're going to support somebody, you don't want to spend time supporting the support tool. So what you do is you send them a link. I've done it with my mom in chat. She clicks the link. It's Java. It downloads in about 30 seconds. The only thing she has to do is say allow, and you could describe that. Say, just click the allow button when it pops up, and boom, now you're on. In fact, if she wants to give you unattended access in future, you could do that. So you don't have to wait around for your client to show up. You could do 8 sessions at once. You could drag and drop fixes from your computer to theirs. It's just about as easy as can be. You don't have to fix the problem in person. You could fix it remotely anytime, anywhere, up to 8 sessions at once. I want you to try it free. If you're in the IT business, I know a lot of you are, or you just have to support people from time to time, there are monthly subscriptions and day passes too. GoToAssist.com is the website. GoToAssist.com. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Do this. GoToAssist.com/Windows.
Very easy. Go to assist.com/windows. You could sign up for 30 days free right now from the great folks at Citrix. 128-bit SSL built in, 24/7 support for you. You're going to love it. Go to assist.com/windows. Speaking of security, who is this guy? He claims.
I know.
Who is this
actually,
guy?
Right, that's a good point. Right. Who is this guy?
Who is this guy?
This guy who is the brother of someone who works at Microsoft.
He claims that Windows 7 is more secure than OS 10.
Yeah.
Well, so you know, I'm going to actually, well, you wouldn't think this of me, but I'm going to back him up a little bit, only in the sense that Microsoft has been assiduously working to patch flaws, to patch holes ever since XP. And I think it's commonly accepted that by doing so and by being so aggressive and by training users and by the widespread use of antiviruses, et cetera, that Windows users are probably safer now than OS X users.
Well, okay, so I agree with everything you just said until it's the widely accepted part. I think people who know what they're talking about understand that Microsoft did do this, that they have formalized a program for ensuring that all of their software is secure out of the box and all that stuff. They have really tried to work with the industry to see that other people, other companies do the same thing, and very few of them have. The recent exception, interestingly, is Adobe. And the reason that Adobe is changing their ways, of course, is that as OSs have become more hardened, hackers have started going after applications, not OSs, right? And so Adobe's applications are very popular, and
it isn't Windows anymore. It's Adobe Flash, you know, Acrobat, all that stuff.
That said, this is one of those. This is a tough thing because this is not a fact. But I can say that using both Mac and Windows. You know, one of the first things I do on Windows is I go in and I install an antivirus, anti-malware package. Now, it's not hard to do, and there are nice ones available that
are
free.
Do you use Security Essentials? Is that your...
Yeah, yeah. So, and my kids use it. My wife uses it. I check their computers routinely. We never have any problems. Basically, we've had actually occasional problems, of course, like anyone would, but nothing serious. I mean, I have a computer in my office again, which I often do for people who have these old computers running XP where... I don't know what's going on. It's running slow. I've got all these pop-up windows. I've got toolbars in my browser. These are otherwise smart people, so obviously that does happen. That doesn't happen on the Mac side. And when I use a Mac, I don't ever think of installing anything or putting, you know, security-wise on there. So I don't know what to say to that. The way I put it is it's not hard to lock down a Windows computer in a way that rivals what's, you know, the way that a Mac is, or expensive, right? It could be free. But you do have to do that. And then once you're there, you have to exhibit some common sense. And then I'd also just point out that regardless of the relative technical safety of either one of these things, you know, hackers are going after Windows in ways that they simply aren't on the Mac. So, I mean, I think we need to acknowledge that as well.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the days, and Apple did this really, the days of saying we're safe and you're not is...
It's still on their site, though. I think if you go to apple.com/Mac and look, I bet there's a thing in there that says we don't get PC viruses. You know, we don't get viruses.
Yeah, that's probably a foolish thing to say.
It's technically true.
Right.
You know, I just think this kind of stuff gets overblown. And I think that even this headline itself is obviously... I don't want to call it link bait, but I mean, it's got a nice little ring to it. It's like, oh, look at this. Right. You know, some guy has said, and this was a guy who had spoken at that Black Hat conference. I went and I looked at his slides to see what he really said, because of course the headlines are crazy, you know, security expert : Windows 7 is much more secure than Mac OS 10. And it's like, well, okay. I would say that technically speaking, these things are very comparable. They actually use a lot of the same techniques to secure themselves, like harden themselves against attack and so forth.
Apple's done some interesting stuff in Lion, and I think probably having learned from Microsoft's experience, there, you know, and Google too with Chrome and stuff. There's a lot of sandboxing things that companies are now doing. I know that if Microsoft were designing Windows today,
oh my goodness, yeah,
they would have done things differently than they did in certainly 95, but even in XP.
This probably is almost certainly related to security when you think about it. You know, Windows is so old in some ways that when it was first invented, because of the low memory situation that existed on these early PCs, there was this system of shared libraries, these DLLs. And the notion being that instead of putting that same DLL in every folder with every application. And easy. We'll just have one copy of it, and this will be a genius scenario. A
shared library.
Well, you can see the problems there. I mean, one of the things that I think is kind of nice about the Mac, and now that we live in an era of basically unlimited resources on these devices with regards to RAM and storage, that you install an app on the Mac, and it's like this, it's really just a zipped kind of folder thing, but it appears as a single unit. And to get that thing off your computer, you just delete it, by and large. I mean, obviously, there are exceptions, but typically that's how you do it. You know, Windows still has this mess of shared libraries and shared code and different versions of DLLs and the DLL hell that occurs when you have to, you know, you replace a DLL and you have to get the wrong version. And it's just, I would like to see, it's not completely security related, but I would like to see a move away from that kind of antiquated part of Windows. It's, you know, just something from the past that doesn't make sense anymore, you know, essentially.
You're seeing it though, Paul.
Yeah.
You're starting, Minwin. Remember Minwin?
What's Minwin? Yep.
Minwin is Microsoft's project to decouple all the dependencies inside of Windows and to kind of isolate different parts of the system so that it's just, you're just can work with the core if you need to. So like the Windows core and some of the driver cores. And it showed up first. Minwin showed up a little bit in Windows 7. But recently there was that article that said there's like 5,000 references to Minwin in Windows 8. So I think you're going to start seeing Windows as a re-architected entity even as soon as Windows 8.
Yeah.
Via the Minwin philosophy.
Yes.
Sure. I don't know if I raised this last week. This is another one of those things I was sort of floating through my head, that this notion that Windows XP is going to exit the supported realm and go into its retirement in a couple of years. And that there's an interesting line that gets crossed when that happened, because XP today is the basis for backwards compatibility with legacy apps, right? That if you run as an individual something like Virtual PC, you could run Windows XP so that you can access some old version of an application. It could be IE6 for some reason for work-related corporate intranet-type apps, or just some random old app. Or on the corporate side, you could use various Microsoft virtualization technologies to do the same thing in a more managed environment. But what happens when XP goes away, right? At some point, XP becomes non-supported. So that is right there, a very natural break with the past from a compatibility standpoint. It might be at that point where Microsoft finally says no, I hope. I have this weird feeling that's not going to happen. But I really do hope that when that does happen, that it does happen. In other words, that they don't have an exception. Knowing Microsoft and their love of backwards compatibility, I could almost picture them having a virtualization exception for XP or something, you know, to allow this stuff to continue. But hopefully it doesn't. And when it doesn't, I mean, what's the oldest version of Windows that would be supported at that point? It would be Windows Vista, which is the basis for Windows 7, which is a fairly modern infrastructure. And that's not such a horrible starting point, you know, as far as, looking at what can run on a computer. You know, if it's compatible with Vista, that's kind of a small subset compared to XP, right? So that would be an interesting thing. Hopefully in a couple of years when that happens, Microsoft hasn't extended that deadline once again. But that's one of those things I'm going to be looking at. I'm very curious to see what happens there.
New server hardware, Windows Homes. Wait a minute. Windows Home Server 2011? Small Business Server 2011 Essentials.
This thing is like, it's like I front padded this thing with all my stuff. I'm sorry about that, Mary Jo. I'm just looking at it now.
Mary Jo's just having a pint, relaxing.
I am just having some pints.
Well, the story here is that Microsoft this year released
they released the software, but didn't HP say they're not going to make these anymore? I mean,
yeah, HP did say that. Although HP did say they would make Small Business Server based servers and Small Business Server Essentials based servers. And I think they're making a Storage Server Essentials server as well. There's actually a third server I didn't list in there based around Storage Server. But yeah, you know, this is stuff that is so much better than what was before. And it's actually, they're both fairly exciting in their own right. But of course, we were also promised new hardware. You know, when I asked about this, when the products were released to manufacturing, I said, it'll be late May, early June, you know, end of June at the latest, you know. And here it is months later, and I'm still, there are occasional things you'll see. I think Acer's got a page where, you know, they're going to have a either a home server or a small business server sometime soon. I've seen somebody sent me a link for a storage server essentials server, but there's been no explosion of this stuff. And it's too bad because I really feel like these products are great. I mean, they're so much simpler to use than the things that they're sort of replacing. And I, you know, it's like Windows Phone. Like, they just, Microsoft made this thing. It's excellent. Nobody really knows about it. And where can I buy this thing exactly, you know? I think in the case of Small Business Server 2011 Essentials, what's missing are some of those add-ins, including the one for Office 365, which will allow small businesses to integrate the things that make sense locally, like storage and user management, with the services that make sense being in the cloud, you know, email and SharePoint and the link communication stuff. So that's not going to happen until the fall. And so maybe at some point in the future, we'll see a bundle where you'll be able to buy from Microsoft or Microsoft's partners, I guess, a small business server with Office 3, you know, with an Office 365 subscription.
When did Microsoft buy Tell Me?
I think about 5 years ago, maybe.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, it has.
Wow. I saw you had a... I'm sorry. Are you done, Paul?
I am done.
Okay.
I've been talking for too long.
I was reading ahead, looking for something besides servers. And lo and behold, Mary Jo Foley rescues me with a story about Tell Me. What was Tell Me?
Yes. Let me tell you about Tell Me.
Tell me about Tell You. Actually, I didn't realize this. It was founded in 1999.
Yeah.
I use some of their stuff, actually.
Yes, you a use, lot of people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy who started it, didn't he start Flipboard?
Really? Well, oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I believe so.
I think you might be right. That actually rings a bell. Microsoft bought Tell Me in 2007 for $800 million.
And it's been a while since people saw much of a return or thought they saw much of a return from it. But now we're starting to actually see Tell Me technology show up in Microsoft products. One of the first things that showed up in was Windows Phone.
Is it VoIP? What is it?
Yep. So Tell Me is speech recognition.
Oh.
And so, you know, on Windows Phone, how you can hold down the Windows right. button. I was right. trying to think what you call that, the Windows button. If you hold it down, it'll say listening. And that's Tell Me's technology. It's listening for you to say something so that it can, you know, use that to calculate the results.
So many people used it as a voice tree or a voicemail tree.
Yep.
You would speak to it.
Yes.
and it wouldn't say Tell Me, but the company
right.
that used
Kinect
it.
Technology too. You know, the voice part of Kinect is also connected, no pun intended, to the Tell Me folks. And now we find out this week at the Speech Tech conference, they told me that Tell Me is going to be part of Windows 8.
Huh.
And so
we'll be able to talk to Windows 8.
Yes, especially on a tablet, on an ARM tablet or an Intel tablet. They're saying, you know, you're not going to have the keyboard and mouse as your first way of entering data. So they're thinking about letting you use your voice and how that would work and making that an option on Windows 8 tablets.
You know, companies keep trying to do this.
Yes.
And I thought this was going to be the next big interface, was you talk to your computer. And then somebody said to me, well, you don't imagine an office full of people going, open, Word, document 37944.doc, start yep. typing. And after a while, you realize it's good for the kinds of things you see on Windows Phone where you press a button and you say, you know, navigate to Friendly Street.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's also, think about it on, you know, when you're not
I'm an optimist, Paul Theroux. You're a pessimist. I'm an optimist. That's all I'm saying.
I just love that you picked Friendly Street.
He snorted.
That's what sold it.
You wanted to go to Grumpy Street. I know.
So, Friendly I mean, it doesn't really make sense in the office. You're right. But, you know, if you have a tablet on the road or a tablet in a hospital and you say you're scrubbed up, you don't want to touch it, it's like you want to be able to say, open the record, right? Open this X-ray. So there are use cases for it, I think.
Yeah. Specialty use cases. But, you know, for the longest time, that was the use for tablets in general was, oh, you said the doctor will use it, or you use it on the factory floor, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But putting it in Windows 8 is kind of implying that it's going to have a broad impact on UI.
I think it'll be an option, you know. And they talked to me a little bit about, you know, since you're going to be encouraging developers to use HTML, HTML5 and JavaScript more, HTML5 has the speech tag. So technically, that could make it feasible for people who wanted to write an HTML speech app to use, you know, to incorporate the tell me kind of experience.
Right.
In theory. Yes. But, you know, then the other thing they showed at Speech Tech, I put a video of this on my blog this week, is they showed a longer-term vision kind of a video where they showed people being able to say to their computer, I'd like to meet Leo for lunch in 2 weeks. And with a combination of Bing and the conceptual understanding technology that's happening there and Tell Me Voice, your computer would actually know who's Leo. You know, where do we want to meet? What kind of food does he like?
Is this
about speech viewing and our future vision? And as part of that, we posted a video that really tries to take a future view and illustrate a little bit more of this vision, not on any product roadmap, but to give you a sense of how we see these experiences.
If he mentions me in this video, I'm going to freak.
So let me go ahead and play this short video for you.
Say it, get it. Say it, get it. That's the...
So, what's the big news?
She got engaged.
Wow.
Okay.
I just want a small ceremony and you need to help me.
I'm Crystal. What can I do for you?
I need a great cake for my sister Anna's wedding.
It's kind of hard to hear because it's a little echoey. So this is very similar to what Apple acquired when they acquired a company called Siri. Which uses, I think, the Nuance speech engine, where you would press a button on your iPhone and you would say, book me a table for two at Rondelet for 7 p.m., and it would do it.
Yes.
Or, you know, as in this video.
Yeah.
So, but
they're saying, you know, they're making it even more, like, open-ended, like, that they're assuming that your social graph data, you know, like your likes on Facebook and all that is going to be incorporated so that it would automatically know, say, that I like vegetarian food. And right. So that would be the kind of restaurant they book.
The irony of this is Apple bought this company and never used the technology. It's still not. It may be going to be iOS 5. I don't know. But it's still not around. Android has something very similar. The Google voice recognition. I can press a button on my Android phone and say, play... You know, Bob Dylan blowing in the wind, and it will play it, or navigate to Friendly Street, and it will take.
But the question is, do you do it?
I actually do. I use it a lot. Yeah, I do use it often when I am unable to type to do text message. I'll press the button and say send text message to Jennifer running late, and it does a fairly good job. I've even done it. Actually, Paul, I've done it to you. You've received, have you not?
I knew it.
Have you not received cryptic emails, very brief emails from me saying I'm running late, show's going to start? Those I'm usually doing them by dictation.
So this is like the, almost using Bluetooth in a car is sort of like this, right?
But I do think it's interesting what Mary Jo's talking about, which is, and that's really when it becomes more interesting, was when you somehow make it smart about you.
Right. Yeah, it gets more personalized, you know, so it knows your likes, it knows from your contact database if you let it touch that, you know, if I say Leo, it's probably you.
Well, that's, and in fact, the Android does do that. I'll say send text to Leo and it will know. But this contact information is the very thinnest veneer of personalization. There, you could go a lot further.
Yes.
And I can count on Mark Zuckerberg to figure out how to do that at some point soon. I like that. I use that a lot, that kind of thing. And I like to see that. I was a little disappointed, actually, that Apple never used Siri. So Tell Me is very similar in that example.
Yeah. Well, and then in the even closer term, you're going to see in Mango that text-to-speech and speech-to-text capability, you know, where you can have it read your emails to you and you can respond by voice while you're driving or whatever.
I can see the TechCrunch headline. A mango that reads your emails to you. I'd click.
And then it says, watch out for that truck.
Can I talk about backup briefly, and then we'll get back to the stories at hand? We say Microsoft's saying they've cut spam and Hotmail by 90%. We've got the new Microsoft Touch Mouse. That'll be fun, Paul. Look at this, Paul. You've put initials next to everybody's name. Yeah. Wow, you're amazing.
Per your request.
A listener Q&A, our tip of the week, our software pick of the week, our enterprise pick of the week, and yes, codename bingo, E-I-E-I-O, all coming up. But before we do that, I'd like to talk about Carbonite.com. The secret. My secret for never losing a bit of data ever again. Backup is so important, PC or Mac. You got to back it up to get it back. I say that all the time. The problem is most people never do it because they have to remember. They have to run the program or if they set up a schedule. Carbonite, very, very sweet. Very, very simple. You download it now. You can get it. And by the way, I really encourage people to try it for 2 weeks because, you know, it's a system software. And somebody called me the other day, said it's not backing up files within my VMware partition on my Mac. And it's like, well, that's why I want you to try it first, because there's some special applications. It will do that, by the way, but you have to have, it makes sense, Carbonite for Windows running in your VMware partition, not Carbonite for Mac. It's things like that. So try before you buy. The good news is you don't need a credit card or anything, just my offer code, Windows, when you go to Carbonite.com. Try it free for 2 weeks, PC or Mac. It uses your internet connection to back up all the time. You don't have to remember it. It's automatic, constantly doing it, trickling it up to the internet without slowing down your computer or your internet connection. Beauty of this is you can look at your files anytime. You can log into your Carbonite account from any computer. There's your stuff. Or on your iPhone, your BlackBerry. It really is a great product. I think they have, I'm not sure if they have a Windows Phone version yet or not, but they have it for most smart devices. Here's the best part. You've probably seen this kind of cloud storage in the past. Less than $5 a month. Less than $5 a month. It's a great deal. Try it right now. Carbonite.com, offer code Windows, free for 2 weeks. If you decide to use it, Windows, plural. If you decide to use it, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Again, when you use the offer code Windows. It really is the key. Off-site backup is so important, and Carbonite just makes it easy and automatic, and that's the secret, if you ask me. Carbonite.com. Offer code Windows. So, moving right along. Well, has it been your experience? You can tell I've been in court. Mr. Thurrott, right. Has it been your experience
yes.
That Hotmail, in fact, okay. Has a 90% cut in spam? What do you say, sir?
You know,
you can't handle the truth. Oh, I'm sorry.
My goodness. Speaking of The Exorcist, I think we found. I think we found where Beelzebub is located.
I'm channeling him right now.
You know, I have a habit of reporting things like this carefully. So, for example, when Microsoft makes a claim such as, we've reduced the level of spam in Hotmail by 90% since its peak in 2006, my headline will always read, Microsoft, colon, we have reduced the, you know, we've cut spam.
Microsoft says.
I don't present that as a fact. So, I actually happen to use Hotmail interactively more now than I used to, so I can't really say for sure, but I've never really had a bad Hotmail spam problem, although based on what I see on Twitter, 50% of the people who use Hotmail agree with that completely, and the other 50% think it is a hive of villainy and scum, so it's hard to say. But they've got a fancy chart.
That's what I care about.
It must be true, Leo. It must be true.
I'm looking at my Hotmail. You know, I don't use the address very much, so I don't get very much Hotmail. Mostly it looks like Windows Live alerts for the last 6 months.
So you should have a spam folder of some kind.
It's called junk.
Junk. So go into junk and look at that mail and see what that looks like.
All right.
And it should be, you know, all that.
Replete.
Well,
you know, and I think this is something Gmail does very well, too. And I think that, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, eCard Delivery, Canadian Pharmacy, number one online pharmacy, hot summer sale. And this is all the last week, so it's got quite a bit of it, actually. And none of that got into my box.
Yeah, I agree with you that Gmail does a great job of doing this as well. I think the problem for Hotmail is that they've been around longer. Right. And for a long time, Microsoft didn't do a good job with this. So Hotmail was and still is, I think, used to send spam. Hotmail users tend to be nice victims and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it's important that they got on top of this, and I'm sure they have done a great job. I mean, I just don't experience big amounts of spam at Gmail or Hotmail, so I can't really...
No,
I can't.
But I think both of them have a better platform for fighting spam than your ISP or software running on your computer, because they're essentially collaborative. And I think Microsoft does this as well as Google. They're collaborative anti-spam, right? So if you mark something as spam and a number of other people do, Microsoft gets smarter about what messages going through its system are spam.
Yeah, and so many messages are sent through Hotmail.
Oh, yeah.
That I think it's interesting how they can impact the overall amount of spam on the internet, you know, simply by fixing Hotmail.
Well, and in fact, they're claiming that, like a 15% cut in the spam overall.
Yep.
Because they're stopping it.
Right.
Yeah, I think for a while, and I don't know if this is the case, but for a long time, spammers loved Hotmail. I mean, that was the platform of choice for sending spam.
Absolutely.
I'm sure
they used that in their marketing, I think.
Yes. Use the email spammers love to use.
Hey, God, love Hotmail.
Yeah. When that Viagra message has to get through, you know they use.
I always go with Hotmail, baby.
The reliable services of Hotmail.
Yep.
So, didn't we talk about the Touch Mouse already? Is there something new to say about?
I don't know. Oh, only that I've reviewed it.
You have one.
I do.
Yeah, this looked pretty slick. I was very interested in this.
It's a nice looking, you know, futuristic.
Ooh,
mouse.
It's pretty.
It looks like a little Darth Vader helmet or whatever, but you know, we talked about ergonomics a few weeks back with Mary Jo, and you know, this thing, like many like most mice, suffers from that same issue, which is that it's just not big enough for me, and I will never use this as my primary mouse. The other thing is, you know from your experience with Apple's pointing
the tragic Mac pad, yes,
yeah. Well, that has gone. See, I used to make fun of that, but I have to say now in Lion, that pointing device makes a lot more sense to me than it used to.
You know what? I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. I didn't use it at all, and now I've resurrected it from my desk drawer.
Yeah,
because so you want to do the swipe thing. You want to do the whoop, whoop.
Right. So I think that this mouse suffers from the same issue that Apple's, Mighty Mouse or Magic Mouse, whatever that one is with the touch.
Still not fond of that.
It's just it doesn't work well for that kind of thing. And that really what you need is a flat surface, and that a big trackpad, is just better if that's what you're looking for. You know, the multi-swipe, the multi-finger gestures and the swipes and all that. So it works. I mean, it does it, you know, there's a lot to learn. And that's true in Lion, too, no matter which pointing device you use.
Does Microsoft sell anything like the Mac pad?
Not like a trackpad, no. Of course, you know, in Windows 8, they're going
to
have...
They might have to. They might want to.
I think so, too, especially now that they're moving to this multi-touch future with Windows 8. For people who have... traditional laptops that don't have touch screens, a big trackpad would work as well, you would think, as well as it does on the Mac. So why not? It seems like they should do that. Or for people who are working now with a mouse on a desktop computer, they might want an external trackpad. Sure.
Looks like they're doing what Apple does in its control panel for the videos in there. I think that's neat.
Because it's hard. You know, and one of the neat things
you have to do it.
Apple did at Lion is when you install Lion, the last thing you do before you can log in is it makes you use the pointing device you have to scroll, and if it's a trackpad, you have to do it right because it's backwards.
Right.
You can't continue until you figure it out.
This is their way of punishing you.
Well, no, it's smart because you could get into the OS and then have no idea.
No,
what's
it's
going
an
on.
IQ test. I'm sorry, you can't use Lion until you can figure out how to scroll.
It is backwards.
I can't do it.
Bobby.
I can't. It is the weirdest thing. I have to say, this is so contrary to any good operating system design, that you've changed something so fundamentally that before somebody is allowed to use the computer, they have to verify that they
can scroll. Well, you know, like 90% of the people who use that control for the first time scroll the wrong way.
Right.
It bumps into the bottom or whatever it does. And it should say something like, nope, that's not it. Yeah, because there's actually a button you click, but it's hidden until you scroll in the right direction, I think it's funny.
It baffles me. Wouldn't you think that would be a some sort of, warning signal?
Well, I will say this. If Microsoft did that, the Apple guys would never stop
the
making
end of
fun
the
of
world.
Yes, they would never stop making
the
fun
the end of the world. Did your mouse just roar?
No. Oh, I dropped some ice into a glass. Sorry.
It sounded like
during the summer, I have to bring extra ice into my office.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. All right, one more time.
Yes, sir.
We are going to try this. We tried it last week, and it was a flop.
What's that?
Listener questions from the chat room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that.
Oh, that. Yeah. Let me go over, if you were to list the best practices for virtualizing in Microsoft Exchange.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a break. We're going to do an ad, and this will give them a chance to collect their thoughts.
Yes. Tell them to ask us some questions about Windows 8 and build.
There you go. Get them excited.
Right?
Well, we've got to be careful, though, because we can't really, there's not much we can say there.
Well, that's okay.
It's because we don't know what to say.
Well, we can have a lot of I don't know.
Don't ask the question yet, kids, because I'm about to
do an ad. Do you think they're going to release a...
I don't know is a good answer.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, I've learned so much from this trial about how to cross-examine people like Paul Theriot. And we will get the truth from Mr. Theriot, if that's his real name.
If that is really his name, yeah, exactly.
It's so fun to watch the attorneys, you know, play that game because they can't. There's very strict rules, legal rules about what they can actually say or imply. Mm-hmm. But you can't. The judge, I guess the judge could go after you for tone of voice. But it's really fun to watch them use, you know, little eyebrow movements or faces to imply that what they're saying is perhaps an indictment of the entire way of life you've come to, you get used to in the United States of America. Let's take a break and talk about Gazelle. You all have extra stuff, I know, at home. Wouldn't it be cool, like, the, you know, some of you probably have a drawer for, like, old phones and gadgets and stuff. Some of you, however, have a tub, you know, one of those kitchenware Rubbermaid tubs. Some of you have dedicated an entire closet or perhaps the spare bedroom to crap that you don't use anymore. And there's one guy, John C. Dvorak, who actually rents a place above a garage.
Nothing worried about that.
In which to put stuff he doesn't use anymore. I know because I went there. It was like Fibber McGee's closet. He actually, in order to close the door, he had to kind of push it until it latched. This was many years ago, many moons ago, when I told John, I need a 56K modem for my BBS. That tells you how long ago that was. I think I just said something in a foreign language to most of our viewers. And all I had was a 19.2. So he said, no problem. I got a ton of 56K modems. Come on over. And we went down to the storage locker. It was full of stuff. If only they'd had Gazelle back then. GAZELLE.com. It's the place to go to sell, to get, actually, you're not really selling it, to get cash. They'll sell it for your gadget. Give it a try right now. Okay, so, Mary Jo Foley, you've got something I know sitting in your a desk drawer that you just don't need anymore. Perhaps an old Windows phone or...
It's like a psychic routine. I'm getting a notion that you have a phone in a drawer.
I'm seeing a Kindle One wireless ebook reader. And is it functional? Yes. And no, in fact, it's practically never been used. I think you have the power adapter, the original battery, the original cables. I believe that there is no case or cover, so I'm going to click that. And then let's see.
Okay, maybe not.
No, it's only worth $13. However, it's
less than the cost of an actual ebook. But please,
continue. Well, hey, you've kept it for a long time. This is the fun part. You can look at the graph as the value of the Kindle One has plummeted. Nobody wants one because, well, we're up to the Kindle 3. But the thing is, that's $13 you didn't have, and you will no longer have the Kindle. So you press this box, add to box, and it adds it to a virtual box. You'll actually supply the box. Let's try something else. I have a Nokia N8 that I really got to get rid of, this thing, before the N9 comes out. So we're going to search for that. And my cell phone, actually, it never has been used. Let's check the box. Is free of water damage? Absolutely. And go on and look how much. $110. See, that's good. Let's add that to the box. Now, once you get your box full of stuff, and you can make it as big a box as you want, they will pay the shipping to ship it to the Gazelle headquarters. And at that point, you get paid. Now, here's the best part. Right now, Gazelle is doing a deal with Newegg, and we all love Newegg.com. If you go to Gazelle.com, I'm sorry. See, I gave you the wrong address. Newegg.com/trade. This is a special place to go. If I spell it right, it'll work great. T-R-A-D-E. To get rid of your stuff so that you can buy more stuff on Newegg. Did I screw this up? No, here it is. Trade in your electronics for a Newegg gift card. Newegg is the greatest way to buy stuff online. I love Newegg.com. And now, all you geeks who know Newegg, you can get a very good deal by going to Newegg.com/trade on your old stuff and buy new stuff. And then next time it'll be old stuff and everything goes circle. It's the circle of life. Newegg.com/trade. Take it from a geek. Keep your gadgets moving. It's very important. You do not want gadget constipation.
Oh, jeez. That's
their slogan. Keep it moving. That's all I'm saying. Gazelle, it's Metamucil for your gadgets. They didn't say that. I did.
Why do you do this to our advertisers, Leo?
I love them. It's out of love. No, it's out of love. And it's so you'll remember that don't let those gadgets get stuck in your home. Flush them out.
Wow.
Newegg.com/trade. And we now have questions. Will Microsoft, this is from Fred, 929. Will Mike, oh, he scrolled right. Boy, there's so many questions. I scrolled right off. Let me go back here. Will Microsoft incorporate Windows Home Server into an Xbox Loke? I think he means like machine. If they did, I would buy it if it had the drive extender functionality. Can you comment?
Jeez.
Yeah, he's not. He's asking for a lot.
So that's never going to happen.
Okay.
No. You know, one of the big questions about Windows Home Server was what happened to Media Center style functionality on the home server. That was something Microsoft did look at, but very clearly their home TV strategy is very different now than it used to be. And I don't think that the terrestrial style, you know, TV tuners that are physically in a box and, you know, hooked up to your cable and all that stuff. I don't think they're not going to be doing that anymore. I think the future is the internet TV type stuff that we're going to see on the Xbox 360 and that's going to be the box that they put in your living room. That's going to be what they have. I don't think you're ever going to see anything like that.
I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of expanded hard drive, though, on the Xbox and some sort of...
Well, they already have, you know, I think the Xbox today ships with a... I think it's 120 gigs.
Why not a terabyte? Why not 2 terabytes? Then you could really use it as a media center.
Because I don't think that's the future. I think there's no reason to store this stuff.
It's all going to be streaming. Yeah.
Yep.
Mary Jo, this one's for you. With a lack of a... it scrolls by fast. I can't even...
What is this thing? It's like watching the event log in Windows.
I know. Mary Jo.
Whoever asked the Shadow of the Beast question is a genius, and I wish to God that that game would come on the PC.
Will the Shadow of the Beast game, says Frack G, ever come out on the PC?
Oh, I'd love to see that. I missed that game.
Don't even know it.
Amiga game.
Mary Jo, will the lack of a pre-show conference at Build mean a potential delay for the Windows 8 beta? I sure hope not. I'm going to resubscribe to TechNet in September, says his name is Win Longhorn, and want to be able to participate in the beta.
No. So Microsoft this week secretly kind of tried to put this under the mat, but they canceled the pre-con that was going to be part of Build. And so everybody's got their theories. Why did they do it? I mean, the obvious reason is secrecy, and they didn't want to let any cats out of any bags before Tuesday, right? But I don't know why they still couldn't have had a pre-con. They could have talked about something like HTML5 and JavaScript development.
Yeah, but that gives away information.
If they have a pre-con,
that's the thing.
Come on.
They're very secretive.
They've already said that. I think. They've already said you're going to have to know HTML5 and JavaScript to be able to develop in the new Windows world. But I don't think it means anything about a delay. I think you're still going to at least get to play with the bits, if not take them home after Build.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, what I've heard is that the bits, such as they are, is not a beta, but rather a developer pre-release preview.
CTP.
Whatever they call it. But it's not gonna, the beta will be before the end of the year. But I do believe that this will be the, well, we know it's going to be the public unveiling, but I also believe that, yeah, we're going to get, we are getting code, but it's, they're not going to call it a beta.
So here's one that's actually near and dear to my heart from Roadrunner. Maybe one of you knows this. I'm a Ford user. I know you probably aren't, but apparently Windows Phone 7 does not work so well with my Ford Touch and Ford Sync. You can't can't voice text or hook directly to the USB in the car. I didn't know that. Any chances Mango will fix that?
Not that I've heard. I know that's a problem.
Any updates coming for the Zune Marketplace on Windows?
I mean the software.
Yeah.
There's, 4.8, yeah. right?
4.8.
Yeah, 4.8. 4.8. Very minor.
Coming?
You know.
Yeah. All right. Any information on code name Midori, Mary Jo? Ooh, I like the name.
Nothing new. I keep trying to find out more on Midori, but nothing. Mm.
So what do you think it is?
I still think it's some kind of a operating system and compiler project that is being led by Eric Rutter at Microsoft.
Also, the component of a drink sometimes called the Pearl Harbor or the melon ball.
That's right. The melon ball, baby. It's exactly what I was going to say.
The melon ballers. They go with the share pinters.
I don't think so.
I kind of like the name Pearl Harbor because of the bombing aspect. But anyway.
How many versions do we know, asks Lugo Man, of Windows 8 will there be? And will customers be able to distinguish among them?
We do not know. All will be revealed, not at build.
Not
how
at build.
Awesome would it, how awesome would it be if they just put it back to 2 or something? You know they're not going to, but no, I mean,
it would be so
nice. What an awesome message that, you know, they got it. You know that we, you know, people have been complaining about this for years. We're sorry. We're going to simplify. I would love to see them do that. I don't expect to see them do that.
Apple does it. There's a server version and a desktop or a regular.
It's not even there's just a desktop version, and now the server's an add-on for that. It's
right.
Beautiful.
So
God bless them for that.
Well, because exactly, an installer can distinguish.
I know.
I guess in a sense, there is really one version of Windows 7. You unlock the version, you know, the level that you have with the serial number you have, but that disk has everything.
Leo, do not apologize for this company. This is this is not right, and this is a valid complaint.
Oasis 503 asks, Paul, if you think Windows 8 will be able to play Xbox games.
I do not.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. I think that concludes this edition of Ask the Pundits.
Dun, dun,
dun. We thank you all for your participation, and each and every one of you will receive a worthless card.
It's pat on the back.
And the pat in the back in the mail. It is time for our tip of the week from Mr. P.T., Paul Thurrott.
So I linked to this on the blog the other day, or actually maybe last week by this point, but Microsoft Press gives out some of its books in PDF format for free. 7 of them, I think, and some of them are very high quality. A subset of those books, maybe 4 or 5 of them, I think, are now available in other formats, including Mobi and EPUB. And what that means is, if you have an e-reader like a Kindle, you can now access those books for free in a format that makes a lot more sense for those devices. So, for example, you can display a PDF on a Kindle, but it looks bad because every page of the book essentially displays as a full-screen bitmap, basically. So it's not like on the Kindle where you get, you know, reflow of text and all that kind of nice stuff, or the ability to resize text. But if you put an EPUB, I think it's EPUB, or I forget which one works on the Kindle, but actually, it's probably Mobi. Whichever one works on the Kindle. When you load that version of the ebook on the Kindle.
Kindle was Mobi. They're going to EPUB.
Okay. But what it gives you is all that awesome stuff that's in the Kindle. You know, the ability to resize the text, the ability of the text to reflow automatically based on whatever images are there and so forth. So I have actually downloaded all of these books that I list in all of the different formats, and whichever one is appropriate for Kindle, I've copied over. And so, for example, Charles Petzold's Programming Windows Phone 7 book.
A modern classic.
It is kind of a modern classic, but it's both Silverlight and XNA development. That, whichever one, I think it's Mobi, whichever one is the Kindle format, looks beautiful on the Kindle, whereas, you know, the previous PDF version, it was tiny and the text was hard to read, especially on the small Kindle. So this is kind of a nice new thing that they're doing. So if you have an ebook reader and would like to read some of these books, and by the way, again, they are free.
That's so great. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, check out that book. It's not just that one. You know,
great.
Introducing Windows Server 2008 R2 is free. Moving to Microsoft Visual Studio 2010.
These aren't like out of date books. No,
these are all pretty modern books. Introducing Microsoft SQL Server 2008 R2. And Maria, own your future. Update your skills with resources and career ideas from Microsoft, whichever the heck that means. So those books are all available in the various the MOBI and EPUB formats. And then there are a couple more that are still available PDF only. And you should grab those too. You can read those on a PC or whatever as well.
How about the Delphi 3 Super Bible?
Not available for free, but I will sell you a copy. I have versions of the book in Russian and in, I don't know if there's a difference, a South Korean or if it's just Korean, but
spasibo,
I have a cool.
Tovarish. That sounds great. I'll take it.
Sure.
Our software of the week is not what you would expect.
I changed it at the last minute. So Amazon this week released, finally, their web-based client for the Kindle, which they're calling Cloud Reader. It's awesome, by the way. It works with Chrome and Safari on both the PC and the Mac, but also Safari on the iPad. And the reason that's interesting, and I did test this, is it allows you to access the Amazon Kindle eBook store through this web app, which is something they can't do in iOS anymore because Apple is restricting content providers from doing that unless they give them 30% of all of the sales. So actually now on the iPad, I've installed this as my Kindle client instead of using the Kindle app because, you know, on iOS you can create a shortcut to a web app as if it were an application. And so you can read your books this way. And it does all the offline caching and all that stuff. So if you download a book,
it's pretty cool.
Be stored online. Yeah, it's beautiful.
This is in Chrome, but it, I mean, it really is an app. That's the idea, in fact, of HTML5 app here.
Yet another reason to love the Kindle.
Oh, I love it. So I could download and pin the book.
And I will say this, you know, if you're a developer, by the way, and you have at least two monitors, one of the neat things you can do is have Visual Studio, whatever your development environment is, in one screen. And then you can have a book that you're using as a reference in ebook format running in a full, you know, in the other screen instead of actually having, you know, you used to have those huge programming books where they're hard to keep open and you have them sitting in front of you.
Programming books in this format is so much better, frankly.
Yeah, it's really a neat way to do it.
Yeah.
If you have this a dual screen.
And people are going to say, well, wait a minute. What about when I get on the plane? This has offline downloading, as
offline.
I just did.
Yep.
Daddy and mommy are different.
Yes, they are.
Oh, boy. This is actually a book that Mary Jo should read right now called The Male Brain and Why It's Broken.
Wow.
No, I added that second part. But my wife read it and she said, oh, finally, I understand what the hell's wrong with you.
You are a shaved ape.
Yes. Well, it all has to do with testosterone and vasopressin. That's what I'm understanding. Anyway, yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's our tip. Beautiful. Or our software of the week. I think they did a nice job. And we played with it on iPad today. I was very impressed.
Yep.
Very, very impressive. Moving along here. Let me go back to the shared document. I believe, according to what I see right here, it's time for Mary Jo Foley to give us her enterprise tip of the week.
Yes, it is. And you're going to get two code names this week for the price of one. So the enterprise pick of the week is something that's codenamed Juno. And Juno are developer tools for database guys. So these are part of Denali, which is the next version of SQL Server coming up. And they're going to give database developers an integrated environment for database design work for any version of SQL Server, both on-premise and the cloud versions, within Visual Studio. So if you're used to coding in Visual Studio, you're going to be able to use these tools to actually develop for SQL Server, which is kind of cool.
Okay, well, there we go. Pretty darn exciting for you enterprise users.
Okay, so then, can we go on to code name pick of
the week? So Juno is our first free code name. And now here is the other code name of the week.
The other code name is very interesting because we've already talked about Apollo on this episode, which is the code name for Windows Phone 8. Mm-hmm. But did you know, Leo, there's another code name Apollo?
Oh, no.
Surprising. The other Apollo is the code name for a feature inside of SQL Server Denali. It's the name for the column store database technology that's in Denali. So when you hear about Apollo, don't just assume it's about Windows Phone 8.
I
hear about it.
I love your enthusiasm, Mary Jo, I must say. Pretty darn exciting, kids.
Codenames are fun, Leo.
But why would they? No, actually, I really love this part. But why would they duplicate a codename? I mean, aren't there enough codenames to go around? Are we looking at a codename shortage?
No. Well, I think for some reason, Microsoft has been recycling codenames lately. They've been making appearances twice. Hmm. And like we talked about last week. What was the one we had last week that was used to be NT3.51 Daytona.
Daytona, but that's now right. That's right. That got recycled.
A new code name for something around Azure. So, yep, they're recycling them. I guess they want to be green in Seattle and keep recycling the code.
There's a code name shortage. Mary Jo Schfoley has no shortage of wit, wisdom, and insight into Microsoft. Just go to her website, allaboutmicrosoft.com, her fine CDNet blog, where she files many, many columns every single day, getting you up to date on the latest from Redmond, Washington. All about Microsoft.com. Thank you for being here. Are you going to be there all weekend at the SharePoint Saturday conference?
Nope. I'm bolting from the padded room instantaneously. Oh.
So this was it. So you stayed for us. Thank you, Mary Jo.
No problem. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Paul Thurrott's website is the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. A lot of the things we talk about on the show are documented, as with Mary Jo, are documented here on his website. It's the one where he's got his nose buried in a giant coffee cup. If you get there, you know you're in the right spot. And you can also read him on, he's the news editor, Windows IT Pro. He's an analyst for Penton Media. And don't forget his great books, the Secrets series, including Windows 7 Secrets and the latest Windows Phone Secrets. He is an expert on Windows Phone as well. Have I covered everything? I believe I have.
Are you loving the shared OneNote?
Yes, I am. So, yeah, this is something we started doing last week, where it's actually on live on the SkyDrive. I closed it prematurely, but let me get back to it here.
You kids with your SkyDrive.
I love the SkyDrive.
Yeah, so I figured what we could do is just we'll start a new page for each show, and then this will allow Mary Jo and I to contribute to this thing, you know, throughout the week as we need to or whatever.
Oh, and you changed it on the fly. We've been using Google Docs kind of that way, and it really is a great way. I tell you, collaboration, there's a future there.
I would use Google Docs, but what was the reason? Oh, right, it's
fine.
Google Docs.
This is the same.
Whoa.
Almost as good. It's every bit as good.
This is dramatically superior.
As long as I don't have to use Internet Explorer, I'm happy.
you could use Safari if you wanted.
I could.
It works great.
That would be creepy, but I could.
It'd be weird, but
it'd be strange. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for being here. We did this show a little bit different. We flip-flopped around, much to the chagrin of the 20 people who came here to see Sarah talk about the iPad. Normally, we do this show in the morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv every Thursday. And we will be back next Thursday to do it. See, there are actually people here. People thought I was joking. They're mostly disgruntled.
None of them look amused, yeah.
No, they're really...
Sorry.
Except for, the two priests in the front row.
Who I'm sure are taking notes, and we'll have some suggestions for you after the...
Does the Vatican have a preference, Windows or Mac? Does it matter?
Wow.
As long as they're stained glass, they don't care.
Thank I think you should give everybody who's there a free Windows 8 slate when they come out.
All right. Wait a minute. They're looking under their chairs right now. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.